Our presentation today is The Power of a Promise by Dr. Hasimi Traore and Mary Sue Roydebuch.
Good morning again. Today I have the privilege of introducing you to a very dear friend, an inspiring humanitarian, and one of the best people I have ever had the privilege to know, Dr. Hasimi Traore. Hasimi was born in Burkina Faso in the town of Dedugu. Although Burkina Faso is rich in culture and beauty, it also has one of the highest poverty rates in the world. In spite of this, Hasimi graduated high school, a privilege reserved for only the top 5% of students from his hometown. And because he was at the very top of his class, Hasimi was chosen to receive support offered by a very generous Canadian family. When he graduated from high school, he received a government scholarship to attend Burkina Faso's Math and Science Institute, where he earned a bachelor's and master's degree in math and chemistry. While earning his degrees, Hasimi also worked for the Peace Corps, and because he had a friend, a good friend in the Peace Corps, who was also a colleague, was attending graduate school in Iowa City, he encouraged Hasimi to go there. So Hasimi used the money that he earned working with his Peace Corps friends to buy his plane ticket. He applied for graduate schools and was accepted at every one he applied for in the United States. While Hasimi, he graduated with a PhD in chemistry in 1995, he began teaching chemistry at UW-Whitewater. And after that, he continued to, he started an NGO, or a not-for-profit for Burkina Faso, and he's been teaching in Whitewater for 29 years. He also recently completed a master's degree in peace studies at UW-Milwaukee. Hasimi, can you tell us a little bit about coming from Burkina Faso as a young man and then landing in Iowa City, Iowa? What was that like?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you and thank Prairie.
Put the microphone closer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Well, I would like, first of all, to thank you so much for inviting me here, and I'm very happy to be with you today. So coming here was really difficult, but one thing is, when I graduated from the University of Burkina Faso, and I was working with the Peace Corps, and my friend Jeremy from Burkina Faso was a graduate student at Iowa, but one of the Peace Corps volunteers is the one who really excited me to come. But when I applied, I was accepted at Purdue, Tulane, Maine, and Iowa. But he was from Iowa. His parents live in Cedar Rapids. And he told me, oh no, go to Iowa because other places are too cold. There was no place colder than Iowa. Where I come from, the coldest it gets is 50 degrees. And when I arrived at Iowa, in Iowa City, it was below zero. I was wondering how people could survive. So, and then, I start to learn how to put warmer clothes. And first of all, the English was not my official language. I speak African, my Burkina Faso language, I speak French. So taking classes in English, it was very hard. And also, I was a teaching assistant. So I don't know how I was going to teach math in English, but I decided I have to survive. It's like they sent throw me in the jungle and I have to manage to get out. So I was doing my own tutoring in my room, you know, try to pretend I am in front of a student, and I was speaking to myself and to improve my English. So when I get to my classroom, And it was hard for the student, but they were so kind and accept me. And then, for instance, I didn't know how to say my toes, or I said the fingers of my feet. And they were smiling and said, no, we say toes. So I was learning English through my students. And the food also was complicated. The first time I discovered Burger King, I thought it was the best food on the planet. Every day when I get to Burger King, I was asking for a Whopper. So then they've given me a nickname, Whopper Man. When I get to Burger King, they call me, oh, be ready with the Whopper because the Whopper Man is here. And all this, the thing really make me happy and energetic, it was people were really nice. The people were not mad at me or angry at me, they accept me. In my department, I receive help from my colleagues, my friend teaching assistant, and it give me a lot of hope that I am in a place that I can succeed. And the math department was very nice, but I tried to translate all my math classes into French, which didn't make any sense. But with my friends, classmates, we were discussing, and it was hard. And the thing I survived also is because when I left my apartment, so I found a TV in front of someone's house. Then back home, if you have an oldest TV, you never throw the TV away. So I wait in December, it was getting dark, and around 6 p.m., I walked by the same place when I saw the TV, when I decided to pick it up. And when I get closer, I saw someone from, you know, in front of the where the TV was, and I went to the house, I knocked at the door, I said, can I take a TV? They said, oh yeah, you can take it. It doesn't work, only the sound. I said, okay. I pick up the sound, the TV, I went to my apartment, I turned it on, I could listen, so to some show, and then few weeks later, I was walking, I saw in a dumpster another TV. I pick up. I went home, I turn it on, but the image worked, the sound doesn't work. Well, I put on the top of the other one. I had a whole TV. So I was watching wrestling. I thought it was real. I was excited. And there was a show on TV. I will never forget Nightline. Every night I was watching Nightline because I like to watch the news. I want to learn. I want to see things. So those helped me, you know, to improve my English and also my student. And after a year and a half, I received my master's in applied math. Then I transferred to the chemistry department and I get my PhD. Then I get hired at Whitewater.
Asimi, in my 25 years of knowing you, I have seen you do amazing things with such grace and deep love for the people who are around you. And I've been inspired by many of those acts of kindness. However, the one that will never leave my heart and that of many was your story and your fortitude to bring the first ambulance to Burkina Faso. Could you tell us a little bit about your childhood and also what inspired you to keep that promise of bringing an ambulance to Burkina?
All right. My childhood was difficult. Because when I was born, less than 1 year, I lost my dad. I never met my dad. It's still hard for me. Because I want to know him, I want to ask him questions. I have a lot of questions I would like to ask him, but I didn't have a chance to ask him. So his best friend had a lot of kids, almost same age with me. His best friend has four wives. You know, that's the way it is in a polygamy family. And his best friend took me as his child. And every day when I get up, I go to his family, I had fun, and only one day, when I was ready to go to school, and I went for the first day of registration, and they asked me for my last name. I said, my last name is Koulibaly, because his best friend's last name was Koulibaly. They said, no, your last name is not Koulibaly, the last name is Traore. I said, how come? This guy is my dad. They told me, no, it's not your dad. I went home, I asked my mom, who's my dad? And then he told me the story about my dad, which it was very difficult for me to know, but I never knew who's my dad. But I still think that to see my mom struggling for me, and it gave me courage. And also, my mom was helping also my friends, because when she was going to the flea market, he was selling donuts, peanuts. If she was making $1 a day, I was a happy boy. I could eat at least one meal. And when I saw him struggling, I said, no, the only thing I can do is to succeed in my life, to help him, to help her. I was only 6-7 years old. And I was, on Sunday, I was carrying her goods, taking to the flea market, help her sell all the stuff. And then I was lucky enough, so when I was in junior high, a Canadian family just wrote a letter to my principal. They want to help a child who's a good kid, but he doesn't have money. And my principal gave my name. And I was receiving sometimes $20, $10 a month, sometimes $50. And guess what? It turned everything for me. I was happy going to school. My friend who were in difficult situation like me, they were coming to my house, we were eating together. I was playing soccer, volleyball, all the sports you can name except swimming. I was doing everything, and in my class, I was a top from junior high to high school, and I was really happy. So when I get to the university, I wrote to the family, I said, you know what? Thank you so much for all your help. Now I am at a university, and I want you, the help you give it to me, if you can, to give to another child, which they did. And then they never seen me, except we write to each other and sending pictures. Until when I arrive in United States, I call them, I say, hey, I am here in the United States. I am at a university. They say, wow. They said they will send me a plane ticket to come to visit them in Montreal. I told them, no, I don't need money to come there. I will come by myself. I took a Greyhound for the first time in the United States, the second time, from Iowa City all the way to New York, 36 hours Greyhound. And then they were waiting for me at the border. So when I arrived, they took me to their house. They couldn't believe it. First of all, they were shocked how tall I was. I told them it was a surprise. I didn't want them to know my height. And I had a wonderful time with them. Then I went back again, many years, and until both of them passed away. So that's those briefly, what I went through when I was a child.
And during that time, you encountered a situation that was difficult and that you made a promise that you kept. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. One thing I forget to add it also. When I was in elementary school and junior high, back home, even today, so you go to school around 7 o'clock, you have to come back at 12, you go back at 3, and then you come back at 5. So I was walking 12 miles a day. It was hard, and also, I didn't speak French. I had to learn French at school. And if you get caught in a schoolyard speaking your native language, you'll be in trouble. So that was a very difficult. And then one day, my father's best friend's child, He was in 10th grade. He was like my older brother. I like him so much. He was protecting me. And he was riding his moped going to the market. I was riding a bicycle. I borrowed a bicycle from someone to help my family to buy something at a flea market. When we met, he raised his hand, say hi, and then suddenly I hear a noise, boom. And I turn around, he was hit by a car. And he never survived. And when I saw that, I was 12 years old. And they tried to take him to the donkey car, to take him to the hospital. And it was hard for me to see it because there was no ambulance to take him to the hospital. And I thought to myself, I say, one day, I'm gonna buy an ambulance to bring to my hometown. And I didn't have money to buy at that time. When I get to the University of Burkina Faso, I couldn't buy an ambulance. When I went to Whitewater, one day I was driving from Whitewater to Stoughton. I saw an ambulance parked in front of someone's backyard. I stopped by, I took a phone number, I called the owner. Then he said, wait for me. And I waited for him. We get into the ambulance. I told him, you know, I'm interested to buy the ambulance. He said, what am I going to do with the ambulance? I told him the story. The ambulance, the price, it was $6,000. When I told him the story, he said, no, he was going to sell it for $5,000. So, well, I didn't have $5,000 cash in my hand. And I was paying slowly until I finished to pay. And then I didn't know how to send it home because it was very expensive, more than $6,000. When I told the story to Mirisu and as a friend in the campus, oh, they said, no, you will take that to Burkina Faso. Well, you remember you did fundraising, a whole community did fundraising for me, and we had more than $10,000. And they told me, oh, you can take it, the ambulance, to Burkina Faso. I said, no, I don't want to go by myself. I want to go with my student who helped do the fundraising, the community, and the university. So six of us went to my hometown, and we delivered the ambulance. Even today, the ambulance is still running. One day I was talking to my family, I could hear the noise. They say, oh, this is your ambulance. I said, no, this is your ambulance. And then when I came back, the Ryan family read the story in a paper, newspaper, and they called me and said, hey, we have another ambulance for you. And then I went, it was on the TV here, and they gave it to me. But this time it was harder to go back and ask people for more money. So I decided to pay myself to send the second ambulance, and the second ambulance is running. Just to tell you, in my hometown area today, when I grew up, it was only 10,000. To today, it's more than 80,000 living in this area. So, and the ambulance is still running, and a pastor sent me an email. I will never forget that, because they took him with the ambulance, going to a very long distance to a second largest city to save his life. And so that was really the reason I did the ambulance. Then I got a third one, I bought it, and I sent it by myself because I was able to save some money.
Asimi, that story still lives on in the Whitewater community and with many others. I know for me, just the journey that you let us be a part of that. And I know you just returned last week from a trip to Burkina Faso. How did you find the conditions now there?
Well, Burkina Faso now is a different place for me because when I went, I found that in 2015, the jihadists just almost, I would say, invade Mali, Burkina Faso, Niger are killing innocent people. Just in December, we went to a small town, not my town, near, in the north, near the capital city. They massacred 600 people. The only thing they want to do, they want to change everybody to Islamist. Well, my father and my mother were Muslim. I grew up in a Muslim family. I went to Arabic school. I used to speak Arabic. I pray 5 times a day from 12 years old until 24 years old. I was doing that. But when I see now, everybody is scared. When I was in the capital city just a week ago, I couldn't go to my hometown because down the road, the jihadists can charge and the transportation and kill all the people. I would say if I had traveled, if I traveled in my home country, somewhere I could get killed because it's not secure. It's a very difficult situation. There are a lot of reasons this happened. It's because now Burkina Faso and Niger and Mali, they are forgotten country. People are dying every day. Even today, once I was reading in Mali, they kill innocent people. But my father came from Mali and moved to Burkina Faso. So life is very difficult. Poverty, a lot of refugees, children. You drive your car by the street, you can see abandoned kids. They're asking for money. They're asking sometimes for $10. And when I was driving from my place to visit my niece, I stopped at a stop sign. There's a guy who asked me only for $30 to save his brother who was in a moped, sitting behind him on a moped. I couldn't believe. I checked in my pocket, I had $80, I gave him $80 to go and buy a prescription to save this young man's life. So life is hard. But people have hope. When you land in, when you land in at the airport, you see people, they still are resilient. They think that things can change, and also believe that things can change. So I'm helping as much as I can. I am sponsoring a hospital, giving money to buy milk for children, and I had 3 scholarships, and I give to elementary school, high school, and university student to help them. But one day that, you know, they also will help someone else. So that's what I'm trying to do.
Thank you, Simi.
Our closing words will be read by Mary Sue Roydebook.
This poem was written by the great South African author, Dennis Brutus. There will come a time, we believe, when the shape of the planet and the divisions of the land will be less important. We will be caught in a glow of friendship, a red star of hope will illuminate our lives, a star of hope, a star of joy, a star of freedom.